Okay, welcome everyone. Welcome back to the Push Podcast.
Welcome back.
I'm Sydney, a labor and delivery nurse and online content creator, educator.
And I'm Megan, OBGYN and clinical researcher.
Today, this is our first time filming at night, actually.
It is. It feels very strange. Usually we film in the middle of the afternoon on a day where both of us are off from our day jobs.
Yes, exactly. But
tonight we're filming in the evening.
Post-bedtime for Sammy.
Post-bedtime for Sammy. He'll be so disappointed to have missed his Auntie Sydney and his Uncle Dan.
I don't get his cuddles.
I know. And we realized as well, we should probably clarify for anyone who has continued along this journey with us that we reference two very important Sams in our life, right?
Yes, this is true. So my mom mm-hmm. is Samantha. So mm-hmm. she goes by Sam. And then
my son is Samson. So he's right now he's baby Sam. But I do think eventually he's going to be big Sam.
Okay, for sure. Yeah.
Like sooner than later. He's a big boy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he's fast asleep. So gave us the chance to record tonight. So if we seem a little sleepy, it's because it's almost 8:30 at night. But
I know. Usually there's water in these cups for anyone watching on YouTube. Yep. But today there is also espresso.
Espresso.
We promise to stay awake, if you will. And if you're listening to this in the evening on a drive home or a road trip or even just winding down, then we're right there with you tonight.
Yeah. I'm excited to be here with you guys right now. It feels so good. It's so cozy. And
it does. It feels very cozy.
And a perfect time to have a conversation.
I'm very excited about our topic today, Sydney.
Yes, me too. Me too.
This is one I have felt at the back of my mind that I really wanted to do a deep dive on just for my own knowledge.
Absolutely.
Since long before we started the podcast. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really excited that I had the nudge to do a little bit more reading this week.
Yes. So should we tell them? What are we talking about today?
I think we should tell them. Do you want to be the one?
Yeah. So today we're going to be talking all about weight gain during pregnancy. So how much weight is okay? How much weight is not okay? Everything baby weight related. So this is a trigger warning for anyone who's sensitive to these topics. We will be talking about weight gain, caloric intake, and all that kind of stuff. So if anyone is sensitive to that, that is totally okay. I was once in your shoes. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy if you skip this episode, but we're also just going to be talking about so many important things as well. So if that isn't sensitive to you, please keep listening.
Yeah. Well, as you've, I think, shared very, very broadly your journey with weight and with sensitivity around that topic. And truth be told, although, you know, I have not experienced an eating disorder in the past, I think that I have also in my life, especially growing up as a dancer, I think, felt a lot of fixation on my weight. Mm-hmm. And gaining weight in my own pregnancy was something that I really didn't know how I was going to handle beforehand. Yeah. And I found really challenging myself.
It was a
big shift, I think, in our sense of control over our bodies, even though we are, you know, gaining weight for this reason that is, you know, overwhelmingly positive for many people, right? It still represents, again, one of the first ways in which we really lose control over our own narrative, I think, in pregnancy. And so I found it a really point of relation to a lot of my patients who've experienced similar things.
Yeah.
And again, was a real fire under me to understand a little bit more about why the recommendations are what they are and how to navigate this, I think, as a whole, both for myself and as a provider in a more sensitive way.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's pregnancy and postpartum. It comes with so many body image struggles. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think women and men, everyone across the world has experienced some form of, you know, body dysmorphia or
100%.
Issues with their own body image and stuff like that throughout their lifetime. But I think pregnancy specifically is one of those moments where your body is changing at such a rapid speed, right? And it's like you almost start to not recognize yourself. And I think that that can be really challenging for a lot of people. So that's why it's important to talk about too, and why we want to touch on it and how to deal with the emotional and mental aspects of that as well. So
absolutely. Well, I think what surprised me is that I felt very different about my weight gain at different points in my pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was not even a static thing for me. It really fluctuated as I went through. Yeah. And I can say the same about my postpartum journey.
Yeah.
For any moms out there who are listening who, you know, did not feel overwhelmingly like, oh, this weight gain, you know, either pre or post is totally fine because I grew this life and this miracle. Yep. I just want to say I'm right there with you. I think babies are miracles. Obviously, I do this job and I think it's incredible. But I have to say, I didn't really feel that like shift in my body afterwards that a lot of women describe. And so while that is wonderful for the people who feel that way, if you didn't, I want you to know as well that
that's also
even
okay.
Right from the jump that we're right there with you and that's also okay.
Absolutely. It's okay for you to feel like the most beautiful you've ever felt in your entire life when you're pregnant. And it's also okay to feel like the complete opposite. Yeah. Everyone's experience is unique. And we're just here to kind of talk about also like what things are good and what things are bad to kind of tell yourself. And when you go to the doctor's office, questions you can ask and just to make sure you're staying on track with your own mental health in this aspect as well.
So, totally.
Yeah.
And what is recommended versus what actually happens. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So why don't we start with the pregnancy side of things and then we'll move into postpartum as we go through the episode.
Yeah.
So I'm sure lots of people who are listening, especially those who've been pregnant themselves in the past, have probably heard about the weight gain guidelines in pregnancy, right?
Yeah. 25 to 35 pounds, right?
Exactly. So we do have guidelines that come from the Institute of Medicine, or IOM, which is now renamed the National Academy of Medicine. And these stratify recommended weight gain ranges based upon BMI. Mm-hmm. So very briefly, for people who are underweight or have a BMI less than 18.5, the recommended weight gain in pregnancy is 28 to 40 pounds. Mm-hmm. For normal weight individuals, so those between a BMI of 18.5 to 24.9, weight gain is? You were right.
I was right?
You were
okay,
right.
Okay, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know, 25 to 35 pounds.
25 to 35 pounds, exactly.
Okay.
For individuals with a BMI between 25 and 29.9, recommended weight gain 15 to 25 pounds. Yeah. And for those with a BMI of 30 or higher, the recommended weight gain is 11 to 20 pounds.
Okay, sorry, I'm just going to interrupt you for a second.
Please,
only because I know that BMI, that's like what we use in the hospital and doctor's office and everything. Online, people have a lot to say about BMI and how that is not a reliable source of measurement for a lot of people, you know, in terms of like muscle weight and all that kind of stuff. What's your take on that? Just quickly.
They're correct.
They're correct. Okay.
They're correct.
Yeah.
They're correct.
Yeah. We just don't have
anything
better
to
use.
BMI is not a reliable indicator of health.
Yeah.
Nor is it really a reliable indicator of fat distribution versus muscle distribution. It's not a good reliable indicator of nutrition or even really increasingly we're finding that it is not as reliable as we would like it to be for even indications of overall health, right?
Yeah.
There are factors within that are much more important than somebody's BMI as a whole or what number range they fall
into. Well, and even when I insert the patient's BMI like on our charting system or not their BMI, but their weight.
Yeah.
And then it calculates the BMI for me online. Mm-hmm. It never takes into consideration pregnancy either, which I find wild. Like at least on my charting system, maybe in other more advanced areas that does, but I feel like there needs to be a button that I click that says pregnant patient, because how does that make sense if you're carrying all this extra weight that's not even like your own, it's the baby and everything else.
This is the thing. Well, listen, and to be so fair to studies that use BMI, I'm sure I have captured BMI in my data sets, right? As a demographic data point. But I think in the absence of a reliable, easy measure that captures kind of the nuance of weight, that's why we see it come up so much in evidence, right? And I think the downside to that is, again, that we perhaps rely more on BMI than we should as a marker for health in general and as a main feature in some of our recommendations for a variety of different medical interventions.
Yeah.
And so this is no different. And I can tell you, I remember studying this for my Royal College exam. I remember memorizing these ranges and the ranges as well for twin pregnancies, which are a little bit higher, obviously, you know, intuitively.
Right.
For each BMI stratification.
Yeah.
Exactly. But again, this is kind of one measure and is not necessarily reliable, as we will learn.
Okay.
Now, where is this weight actually going, right? Because there's a lot of different things happening during a pregnancy. And as you alluded to, Sid, your BMI going up in pregnancy is not quite the same as BMI going up for other reasons outside of pregnancy, right? Yeah. Whether that be like muscle gain or fat gain or any of the above.
Yep.
So let's break down kind of where those pounds are going.
I always find this so interesting. Whenever I see on Instagram, I've seen like people post pictures with like 50% going to here, 10% going to here. So let's see. Let's break it down.
Lots of different places that weight goes. So, and these are just kind of averages, right? Yeah. Obviously, each individual body is going to distribute weight a little bit differently.
Yeah.
But overall, baby usually weighs somewhere in the realm of 7 to 8 pounds. Mm-hmm. Or if you're growing a baby Sam, a little bit more than that. Fat stores, typically between 6 to 8 pounds.
Yeah.
Increased blood volume alone accounts for 3 to 4 pounds.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
Increased extravascular fluid volume. So basically what we would recognize as kind of like swelling in general, right? Yep. Pushing a fluid outside of the blood vessels into the surrounding tissues, 2 to 3 pounds, mm-hmm. right?
Those swollen ankles.
Amniotic fluid weighs 2 pounds.
Yeah.
Which, reflecting on some of the floods of water breaking I have seen in the past, sometimes I wonder why that's not more.
Yeah, seriously. I was just thinking that exact same thing.
excuse me. Breast enlargement accounts for 1 to 3 pounds.
Yeah.
Uterine hypertrophy, right? Or like in layman's terms, your uterus gets bigger to house your massive baby, right? Uterus goes from being like about this big, if you can see me on the YouTube, to about this big for your baby. And so obviously there's going to be some additional muscle weight associated with that.
Yeah.
And then the placenta, which is one of the most incredible organs in our entire bodies. It's placentas. Our only disposable organ, right? That we create from scratch and then is completely disposable. That weighs about 1.5 pounds.
And I find the bigger the baby, the bigger the placenta. So they tend to go, not always, but they tend to go hand in hand. So if it's a big baby, it's also a big placenta usually.
Yeah. So when we're talking about these weight gain recommendations, right? A lot of that weight gain is not necessarily just fat. I think we always think about weight as being like increased adiposity or adding to our fat stores.
Yeah.
And as we can see, that's really not the majority of the weight
for pregnancy.
For pregnancy, right? Like the majority of sources are all of the other things combined.
Yeah.
So then where did these guidelines come from, right? Anytime I see something, especially now that I'm in practice and I'm kind of confronted with the reality of medicine, I often start to question, you know, the things we have been taught and say like, okay, but like, where did that guideline come from? Where's the data being pulled from? Like, what were the studies that contributed to that?
Yeah.
So these IOM/NAM guidelines were originally developed way back in 1990, but they were actually updated in 2009. Okay, so not terribly old, about 16 years old. They're mostly based on observational data as opposed to things like randomized controlled trials or systematic reviews with limited clinical outcomes that were captured. So not a lot of data about like what actually happens if people gain more weight than that. They also didn't stratify obesity into different classes. And so all obesity is lumped together despite potentially different risks, right? And again, the focus with these guidelines was on population level risks, as many studies that would be looking to develop guidelines do, right? So not individual predictions or risk thresholds, which I think is important for individual peoples to keep in mind. Now, there have been some studies that have been subsequently done, right? To examine like, how helpful is this actually, right? And something I was surprised to see quantified in the research, but not surprised from like a real world side of things, is that only 1/3 of people actually gain within the recommended weight gain range.
Yeah, that's completely, that makes sense.
That makes total sense.
Yeah, from what we see.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. So there was a 2017 meta-analysis of 23 different cohort studies that crossed 1.3 million patients. And basically what this found was that excess gestational weight gain is linked to a decreased risk, actually, of preterm birth or small for gestational age infants, so little babies, but an increased risk, predictably, of large for gestational age infants, as well as cesarean section. Now, low gestational weight gain, which, again, we don't talk about enough, I think, but is also sometimes a concern, right? Had no difference in C-section risks, but an increased risk of preterm birth in small for gestational age children. Now, what's important from the limitations of this particular study is that gestational weight gain was not adjusted for gestational age, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't necessarily account for the fact that we would consider a delivery at 37 weeks to be term, and we also consider a delivery at like 41 and a half weeks to be term, right? Which spans a whole extra month of weight gain for baby and for mom, right?
Yep.
Spontaneous versus induced preterm births were also not separated. And it did not account for things like diabetes or preeclampsia, risks of which we know have been tied with weight. There was also very heterogeneous definitions of what gestational weight gain was and what was excess of weight gain across the studies. So again, difficult to apply if I'm, you know, trying to synthesize a bunch of different studies and pool that data to try and decide, you know, is this real or not real with respect to our findings? It's hard for me to do that always in a super reliable way if the studies have defined weight gain differently, right? Or what excess weight gain looks like. And so that's certainly a challenge. Heterogeneity is always a challenge when you're doing a systematic review. And certainly, you know, this one was no different.
Okay.
Now, what has the subsequent data told us? And I think that this is really where we get into kind of the meat of meaning of weight gain and weight in general with respect to risks associated with pregnancies. So there was a project called the Life Cycle Project done in 2019 where they looked at nearly 200,000 patients. And they stratified gestational weight gain across obesity classes. And what they ultimately found was something that, again, I think intuitively we see in practice is that pre-pregnancy BMI was a far stronger predictor of outcomes than gestational weight gain, right? Gestational weight gain alone, when we just looked at how much weight somebody gained in a pregnancy, had low to moderate predictive power for adverse outcomes, which means that it's not a great standalone tool, right? It's not necessarily very strongly associated with any increased risk of things like diabetes, preeclampsia, large babies, small babies, C-sections, right? What is a far greater predictor is what our weight is before we get pregnant.
Prior to pregnancy. So why are we so focused on making sure we get the weight at every prenatal visit?
Exactly. So I think, again, what this more recent data suggests is that we should be taking a more individualized approach. And I think especially with patients with obesity or who are in larger bodies, right? This rigid focus, I think, on staying within this range, number one, may do more harm than good. Number two is not achieved very with any kind of consistency, right? And I would worry that it would lead to things like shame and restriction, right? Which is not good in pregnancy, or at, you know, the very least, unnecessary anxiety.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
So Sid, have you seen people in clinics or coming in through triage who are really concerned about their weight?
Yeah. Sometimes I have people be like, you know, they'll start to kind of roll their eyes and be like, oh, I put on another 5 pounds this month or something like that. And, you know, or when I ask them, because the way our system works is like, we actually have to ask, like, what was your most recent weight, which it sometimes is written down in the like antenatals or the information that we get from the provider's office, but sometimes it's not. So I actually have to like verbally ask it. And that's one of the, like, my biggest pet peeves. I hate doing that because it's just, it's not like you, I don't know that person's history and I don't know if that's okay for me to ask. And like, sometimes that can be triggering for someone. Right. So it's like, especially in this kind of context, like if I bring it up and then they're like, yeah, I know I gained five pounds this month or whatever, you know, and then they feel shame about it. And then I have to kind of be like, well, no, like, it's okay. Like, don't, like, I'm just asking because I need it for the charting. But I think they feel like sometimes that I'm judging them as the provider. And that is not the case at all. But it can feel like, I think they feel shame because there's no other time in life usually mm-hmm. where weight gain is celebrated.
Yeah.
You know, and but
or
in
tracked really as consistently as a norm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
That's so true.
And you know, your point of, or you're bringing up this idea that people are like, oh, I know I gained too much weight this month, for instance, right?
Yeah.
I think should also be called out because there is no good evidence to suggest any particular progression of weight gain being the norm during somebody's pregnancy.
Yeah.
So these outcomes did not look, even again, this IOM data that we all quote over and over again with respect to like ideal, ranges, is based on like calculating at the end of pregnancy the total that somebody gained. It doesn't look at how that weight came on like
through the course of trimester to trimester.
Exactly. Yeah. And truth be told, weight gain can look really different at different times.
Yeah.
I've seen sometimes people say or like clarify with me this idea that they shouldn't be gaining any weight during first trimester, mm-hmm. right? And I certainly found that when I was pregnant, I saw a lot of videos on social media of, I don't know why I was getting attacked with these videos, but I feel like I saw so many videos of these women who looked incredible in first trimester and even into second and did not look pregnant at all.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I went on my honeymoon at 7 weeks pregnant and couldn't fit into, I think, any dress I brought with me.
Yeah.
I had this whole like wardrobe idea for what I was going to wear on our honeymoon and nothing fit.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. I had like three dresses from before that fit.
But sometimes you're in full survival mode in the first trimester and when only crackers or cookies or McDonald's fries are what actually stays down.
Well, this is the
right. And that's okay.
So there's a few reasons why people might find that they gain more weight in first trimester.
Yeah.
Now, while there is some evidence to show that for some populations, a lot of early weight gain, mm-hmm. not necessarily like just specific to first trimester, but weight gain that's coming on fast and early can be predictive of bad outcomes.
Okay.
Overwhelmingly, like there are a few really normal reasons why people might find that in their particular body that they see more weight come on early in first trimester.
Yeah.
The first is fluid retention, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you have hormonal changes almost immediately.
Similar to
pregnancy.
Like your period.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. You have rising progesterone and estrogen, and that often leads to fluid retention, even if you're not eating much. And so swelling, bloating, even visible puffiness in the early days is super, super normal.
Yeah.
The other is reduced activity levels, right?
Yeah.
First trimester fatigue is real.
Real thing.
It is, oh my God, it is real. It was all I could do to like stay awake and
like
finish my work in
the...
Oh my goodness. I used to get home. I was pregnant in my fellowship and pre-pregnancy, I would get home from work pretty late.
Yeah.
And I would sit and I would do work on my research or my projects in the evening or my master's until I went to bed. And I remember typing with my laptop on my chest, horizontal on the couch, just like desperately trying to finish this paper when I was in first trimester because I just like could not be horizontal.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could not be vertical. I was so tired.
Yeah.
And falling asleep with my laptop top on my chest so many times.
Yeah. Yeah.
So obviously I was not going to the gym in first trimester.
No, which majority of women are not.
No. Like, listen, if you are, incredible. Props to you.
Yeah,
like full support.
Yeah.
I have friends and know lots of women who found that they were able to keep up their usual activity. Sometimes they even feel great. And to those who do, incredible.
Amazing.
Right?
Like, but it's also okay if it's not you.
Lovely.
And like give yourself grace.
If you're in bed at 7 p.m. every night, you're in good company too.
Exactly.
Right? And it's because your energy levels are being diverted, right?
Yes.
To growing the first stages of a human, which is like an incredible feat for your body.
Yeah.
The other thing too is food choices, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people experience nausea in first trimester.
Yeah.
Just as a brief sidebar, if you do feel a lot of nausea in first trimester, there are tons of safe antiemetics, anti-nausea medications that you can be using that your provider can be prescribing for you.
Absolutely.
If you're told that they can't, find a different provider.
It's not true.
because there are lots of really good safe medications. Yeah. And first trimester, we often downplay nausea and vomiting in first trimester a little bit.
Oh, that's quote unquote normal. Like you're just pregnant.
Normal.
But if you're vomiting multiple times a day and it's impacting your... Or just you're just nauseous and impacting your activities of daily living, that is not normal.
First trimester, even if it's not... You know, even if you're not throwing up so much that you like can't get to work or can't function, first trimester is 3 months long. And that's a long time to feel terrible every day.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like,
imagine if you had the flu for 3 months. Like, oh, I, that's not
every day felt like a year in my first trimester. Yeah, and so, oftentimes, people are eating like bland, carby kind of foods. Yeah. And again, like, there's no shame to that. If that's what you have to do to feed your body, like,
survival
that's what you
mode, that's okay.
Exactly.
Yep.
And then the last thing as well is that pregnancy primes your body towards fat storage, right? Yeah. And it often primes it early, right? Especially in the first and second trimesters. And that's to prepare for the energetic demands of late pregnancy and lactation. Mm-hmm. Your body can also become more insulin resistant as early as 10 to 12 weeks, right?
Mm, interesting.
And that also promotes fat storage, even if your caloric intake isn't very high. So suffice to say, there are tons of reasons why people may experience earlier weight gain. And again, if you find that your weight kind of jumps up really quickly,
it's okay.
It happens to a lot of people and there's nothing.
Take a deep breath.
There's oftentimes nothing abnormal with that, right?
Yeah. So Mike, let's go through some myth busting.
Okay.
You already kind of busted some of them. But
I know. I couldn't help myself. We did have these questions written down and I jumped right into them.
I'm happy for you too. But this is like the biggest one that I hear all the time. So I need you to break it down for me. You're eating for two. So you need to eat more.
I know. I mean, so yes, you do need to eat more, right? But you do not, unfortunately, get to double your
double completely.
Exactly. So in first trimester, really, we don't actually need any additional calories per day, right? Our energy needs are nearly the same as baseline, in spite of the fact that we don't feel that way, right? And weight gain, if it occurs, is usually related to the other factors that we've talked about, as opposed to like just additional caloric intake. Okay. Right? By second trimester, though, we do need about 340 extra calories per day. This is because of increased maternal tissue growth, blood volume, and early fetal growth as well.
Okay.
So that's not a ton of extra calories, right?
No.
And then by third trimester, we need an extra 450 to 500 calories per day. Fetal growth accelerates and the demands are highest in this trimester.
Yeah.
But I think what's honestly more important to focus on than like calorie counting in and of itself, as with times outside of pregnancy, the quality of the calories matters a lot more than the quantity, right?
Yeah.
So really what we should be emphasizing is not necessarily like only limiting yourself to like a 350 calorie snack extra per day.
Yeah.
But focusing on feeding your body with like nutrient dense foods, right? Things that contain good amounts of protein and fiber and healthy fats and iron and folate and calcium and all of these good things, as opposed to just calories in and of themselves. Because calories are only one measurement that matters when we're talking about nutrition.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Number two, if you gain too much weight, your baby will be too big and then you'll need a C-section.
So I understand where this comes from, and there's some truth, but some nuance to kind of this discussion. Mm-hmm. First of all, there's many factors that influence fetal size and birth outcomes. In spite of my, like, for instance, pretty big weight jump at the beginning of my pregnancy. I didn't actually gain very much in my second half of pregnancy. My weight gain was like all concentrated at the beginning, like the first 20 weeks, and I grew a monster baby.
Yeah.
And so it really didn't have anything to do with my caloric intake, nor does it for many people, right?
Yeah.
Outside of like specific conditions like gestational diabetes, which are associated with
large babies.
Babies, some people grow bigger babies than others, right? Some people grow smaller babies than others.
Totally.
And as long as baby and mom as well, everything is okay from that perspective.
Yeah.
Now, there are some risks with birthing larger babies, regardless of why they are big.
Yeah.
So the current recommendations are to offer an induction of labor around 39 weeks for large for gestational age babies for parents without diabetes. And that's usually when the estimated fetal weight at birth is going to be between 4,000 and 5,000 grams or 4 to 5 kilograms. And again, this is based on a 2023 systematic review that looked at a meta-analysis of over 1,000 patients and found that induction around that time frame reduced the risk of neonatal fractures, as well as the risk of shoulder dystocia, which is baby shoulder getting stuck on the way out, which is a major obstetrical emergency that in rare circumstances can lead to major fetal compromise from lack of oxygen to the baby's brain and even death.
Mm-hmm.
However, the data from this, importantly, isn't strong or compelling enough to recommend this as a blanket intervention for everybody.
Okay.
And so expectant management is also found to be reasonable at this time. This was in the conclusions from this study, as well as on UpToDate, which is kind of our encyclopedia that is updated intuitively pretty frequently for medical practice. So it's not a strong recommendation. It's just something to begin discussing with patients and weighing people's particular values with respect to going into labor naturally versus accounting for or minimizing the chance of obstetrical emergencies like shoulder dystocia. Now, for people with gestational diabetes, there are some other guidelines that kind of dictate when we would recommend induction. And that has more to do with like the medical complications of diabetes as opposed to the size of the baby themselves. However, for people with gestational diabetes, that range where we would kind of be thinking about induction for size is around 4,000 to 4,500 grams.
Yeah.
Now, that's for babies without diabetes that weigh more than 5 kilograms, or babies whose parents do have gestational diabetes who are projected to weigh more than 4.5 kilograms, there is some evidence to offer an elective C-section at that time.
Yep.
However, no one is going to drag you to the OR kicking and screaming, or no one should, certainly.
No.
And these are all things to be taken into consideration and having the way, the pros and cons, the risks and benefits of all of the possible interventions weighed and discussed as a team so that we can really come to like a shared decision-making process with between patients and providers.
Absolutely. Yeah. And for those of you who don't know, we, this might seem pretty, this is pretty straightforward, but obviously we're getting baby's weight estimates from the ultrasound.
Yeah.
So I have seen,
which become less accurate the further we get along, right?
Exactly.
The variance is about 10 to 15% either way in third trimester, right?
Yeah.
So that's important to consider as well.
Yep.
Right? Is that if you are projected to have a baby that weighs a lot and where you're talking to your provider about induction, it is certainly possible that your baby weighs 10 to 15% less than what's projected on that.
Yep.
It's also possible that your baby weighs 10 to 15%
more.
So we have seen both.
Yeah.
And so I see both things, right? I see people becoming really fixated on the exact weight on an ultrasound.
Yeah.
And it's important to emphasize that that's not a promise, right?
No.
It's an estimate.
Mm-hmm.
But I also see people really discounting ultrasounds in third trimester and saying, well, they're not very accurate anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is that they're accurate within a range.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it would be rare that we would miss a small baby and say that it is a super large baby or vice versa.
That doesn't happen nowadays. For
exactly. I mean, listen, everything happens in obstetrics. Like in medicine in general, there's always an example of everything.
But I would say majority of the time, the ultrasounds are
close
to being what the actual baby's weight is.
Exactly.
Given that 10 to 15%.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Next one here is you shouldn't gain much if you're in a larger body already.
Okay. So partially true, right? Mm-hmm. As we've discussed, pre-pregnancy BMI is more predictive though than weight gain in pregnancy alone. And I do think that weight stigma can harm outcomes a lot more than weight alone, especially if people aren't in larger bodies, aren't offered appropriate care or compassionate care. If they are pushed into interventions that maybe are not required or not indicated because of their size. Or if they are reluctant to seek appropriate care because of the stigmatization that they've experienced in the healthcare setting previously, right? And so those things to me, I think, are a little bit more, are often more concerning than the projected weight gain alone. Now, I was curious because you can see in the IOM guidelines that the weight, the projected weight gain does go down, right? The higher your BMI or the ideal, quote unquote, amount of weight goes down, the higher your BMI is. And so I was curious as to why that was. So one of the best studies that looked at this was the Energy Balance study in obesity that was published in 2022. And ultimately what that found is that people with obesity can meet pregnancy needs by mobilizing fat stores as opposed to increased intake. Because my kind of thought was, how on earth could we be recommending what seems to me to be a caloric deficit, right?
Yeah.
In pregnancy to anybody in mm-hmm. any body size. Mm-hmm. But it does seem that for women who are larger or who have more adiposity, mm-hmm. that their bodies are actually able to mobilize stores from that.
That makes sense.
Well.
Mm-hmm. I have had a couple patients who I like look at their pre-pregnancy weight versus their most recent weight at the mm-hmm. end of their pregnancy, and it's gone down or it's about the same. And I'm mm-hmm. always like, how does that work? How? You know?
And so that's how you can have a healthy pregnancy in that context. Because yeah. I think otherwise we would not consider weight loss in pregnancy to be
a recommendation.
And for a human in any size body, we don't recommend focusing on weight loss in pregnancy.
Yeah, specifically. Like you don't want any drastic changes.
Yeah.
With your exercise or your diet truly during pregnancy.
Yeah. Now, with respect, again, one more stat I want to throw out there is from a 2020 study in the British Medical Journal Pregnancy and Childbirth subsection by Inkalingo Rodriguez et al., where they looked at people's experiences with weight stigmatization in pregnancy. And what they found is in prenatal healthcare, 1 in 5 pregnant and postpartum women report weight stigmatizing experiences.
Wow.
And I would hazard a guess that this happens to women in larger bodies far more than it does to women in normal or more middling BMI bodies.
Yeah.
And so again, and that is associated oftentimes, this they found in the study as well, with things like depression, stress, unhealthy eating, and postpartum weight retention.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's a really important thing to be keeping in mind as we discuss this.
Yeah, absolutely.
The last thing, sorry, I promise this is actually the last thing. I'm just like, I really deep dove this episode because I've been meaning to look at
this. It's so important to talk about. And it's something that I feel truly not a lot of people talk about.
No,
100%. In this world at all.
No, 100%. So the data also really doesn't support micromanaging weight as the key to a healthy pregnancy in anybody. There was a trial called the LIMIT trial that looked at over 2,000 pregnant women with BMIs over 25. And they were randomly assigned to usual care or a comprehensive intervention that included things like a healthy diet, exercise, and behavioral strategies provided by a registered dietitian as well as trained research assistants. And what they found was that gestational weight gain and also almost all pregnancy outcomes were similar for both groups.
Mm.
The intervention group did have fewer births greater than 4,000 grams, though. So that was the only thing that was different between the two. Okay. And I have kind of anecdotally felt for a while like people are kind of going to gain what their bodies want to gain during pregnancy.
Yeah.
And it seems as though that is at least somewhat reflected in this study itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
So again, while we should not necessarily be like ignoring weight gain that is either far like very high or very low, I do think this kind of circles back to the idea that micromanagement of weight, either by providers or by individuals, is probably not in service mm-hmm. of a healthy pregnancy and may in fact be in disservice of it, right?
Yeah, 100%. I know that for my pregnancies going forward, because of my history, I probably will say I don't want to know what my weight is during pregnancy. And that is also okay to communicate with your provider ahead of time too, right? So do what's best for you, but consider these things too, right?
I actually asked to not know as well.
Did you?
In my pregnancy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
I figured it was none of my business.
Yeah. It's not, right?
Yeah.
It really doesn't matter. It isn't any of your business.
I knew I would hyperfixate on it.
Exactly.
And I knew that it was better that I not know and that I focus more on how my body felt than how it looked or how much I weighed.
Yep. Yep. And I mean, you can decline them mm-hmm. all together. You don't even need to step on a scale, but you can also step on the scale backwards or and just be like, hey, you take the reins on this, you know? Just let me know if I need to change anything.
Exactly.
and go from there. But do what works for you. But yeah, it's interesting to know what you chose to do for yourself as well.
Yeah.
Okay, let's change topics now. Let's go on to postpartum and all of that pressure that everyone feels to bounce back.
Oh, God,
I'm using
back.
my quotation marks here. Bounce back culture postpartum.
Oh, geez. Listen, again, to women who, went back down to their pre-pregnancy bodies immediately. Amazing, right?
Yeah.
Like, incredible.
Yeah.
Everyone's postpartum is different. I would hazard a guess that everyone's postpartum is difficult in some way, right? Yeah. Whether the thing that is difficult for you is weight or mood or sleep or breastfeeding or any of it above. It's all a challenge.
It's really a massive life change. Mm-hmm. It's a life event that's going to change everything for you, right? How much you're moving, how much you're eating, all that kind of stuff. So,
you know, one of the first things that surprised me, Sydney, when I first saw deliveries, I think, as a medical student.
Yeah.
On the topic of bounce back, and I'm sure you can echo this as well, is that you don't go from looking 9 months pregnant to zero months pregnant when you have your baby.
Well, but Megan, that's what they do in the movies.
That's true. That's
in the
true,
movies,
right?
They look completely flat stomach, right, after they have a baby.
Exactly. I mean, when the baby is a prosthetic belly as opposed to a real life uterus that needs 6 weeks minimum to shrink back down to its pre-pregnancy size. Yeah. It's easy to bounce back to a flat stomach.
Yeah.
So Sydney, I'm sure you've seen that as well with your postpartum
and
patients.
I usually say, like, you're honestly still going to feel like you're at least 5-6 months pregnant right after you deliver your baby. Like, that is completely normal because your uterus is still big. It's still enlarged. It, as you said, needs 6 weeks to shrink back down to its normal size again, or normal pre-pregnancy size. Yeah.
No, I know. I think I agree. I feel like you go from looking maybe 9 months pregnant to probably 6 months.
Yeah. That's what I tell all my patients, because it's very like, and I would say 90% it is that way. Mm-hmm. Truly.
Yeah. So again, where does this weight loss go, right? Mm-hmm. So your initial weight loss, just with baby fluids, your fluid shift in your body, most people lose about 10 to 15 pounds pretty immediately, right? Mm-hmm. And then the rest of our weight change over time is kind of a gradual change over months. And this is, you know, I have in my notes here, especially if breastfeeding, but truly breastfeeding even is a very individualized factor that goes into whether you gain weight, lose weight, maintain weight in the postpartum period. And weight retention postpartum doesn't mean that anything is wrong. It's actually very, very normal.
Yeah.
So another National Academy of Medicine study estimated that at 6 months postpartum or later, the mean postpartum weight retention was about 12 pounds, 11.8 pounds. Mm-hmm. So most people are still carrying some quote unquote baby weight.
Yeah.
Even 6 months postpartum.
Yeah.
Half of individuals in this study retained more than 10 pounds and 25%. So a quarter of people maintained more than 20 pounds, right? Mm-hmm. And it really is different for everybody. Now, crash diets, intermittent fasting, over-exercise can always be super harmful postpartum as well. Yeah. Now, that's not to say that you can't start maintaining or working to achieve weight loss if that is within your goals postpartum. But certainly there are some considerations, especially if you're breastfeeding, that need to be taken into account.
Well, I was just going to say, don't you need even more calories when you're breastfeeding? Like, I've heard that the breastfeeding hunger is just next level.
Yeah. So breastfeeding burns kind of a minimum of 500 calories a day or so. Yeah,
which is a ton. Like, that's a lot.
Exactly.
Wow.
So certainly for maintaining milk supply, if that's something that is important to you, if you are breastfeeding, severe calorie restriction, so less than 1500 to 1800 calories a day, has been associated with reduced milk volume in many studies. I will say anecdotally as well, I'm part of a few like Facebook groups with moms, especially like physician moms. And I think a lot of people have experienced, as I kind of like cruised through these pages in preparation for the episode, milk reduction, even with smaller calorie deficits.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it really is, I know we keep echoing this, but it's a super individualized experience for many people.
Yeah.
The other thing though, is that maternal mental health is a big thing postpartum, right?
Yeah.
And restrictive diets and overexercise have been shown to worsen mood, anxiety, and body image, especially in the setting of sleep deprivation and hormonal fluctuations. Mm. Postpartum is already a period in time that's high risk for depression and anxiety, and extreme lifestyle intervention. So this like hyper focus on bounce back, right? And losing the baby weight can absolutely increase emotional and psychological stress.
Yeah.
The last thing as well, I think, to consider as you're starting to navigate postpartum is that your body's healing.
Yeah.
like the uterus is shrinking back down. Your tissue is repairing, especially after perineal trauma or C-section.
Or C-section. You could have had major surgery.
And your hormones are rebalancing. Yeah. Right? And all of this requires nutrients for and energy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Over-exercise before your pelvic floor and your core stability has been restored can also worsen things like diastasis recti and increase your risk of pelvic organ prolapse.
It can be more harmful.
Or lead to injuries, right?
Yeah.
And so slow and steady is oftentimes a far more advisable approach than being focused on losing baby weight within any, you know, arbitrary time frame.
And listen to your body, you know, like just because your next door neighbor, you know, was going on these huge walks 2 days postpartum after having their baby doesn't mean that you have to be doing that same thing. If you're not feeling ready to even just go on those longer walks or, you know, move your body in those ways postpartum, that's okay. Listen to your body. You can talk to your doctor. You can also see a pelvic floor physiotherapist when the time is right. I do think that is something that everyone can benefit from, but just listen to yourself and take it slow. Like this isn't a race. You need to just trust your body, listen to it, and nourish it the way it needs to be.
Yep. Yeah. 6 weeks recovery is minimum. At 6 weeks from my pregnancy, I like ran to my pelvic floor physio. Mm-hmm. I was so excited to start pelvic floor physiotherapy.
Yeah.
I'd been sending patients to pelvic floor physio for years. And I was like, I'm a believer. I was like, here we go. She's going to change my life. And spoiler alert, she did in many ways. Like I like am obsessed with my pelvic floor physiotherapist. Which I think I've alluded to in other episodes.
Yeah.
But she actually told me I was not allowed to run.
Really?
Yep. She assessed my pelvic floor. And again, I was 6 weeks postpartum. I was my own mother told me that she was like running at like 2 or 3 weeks postpartum. Yeah. She was a bounce backer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I had this idea in my head that I should be like getting back out there and I should be. And from a mental health perspective, I was like looking forward to doing that again.
Yep.
But my pelvic floor PT assessed my pelvic floor and she was like, nah,
not ready yet.
Not yet.
Yeah.
She's not ready.
Yeah.
So I had to go back to strengthening exercises and focus on my core and my pelvic floor before I was allowed to do that.
Yeah. But that's why it's also beneficial to have someone assess it too, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because how would you have known otherwise? You really wouldn't have known.
No. Yeah. No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
So I do think another thing to address is breastfeeding and its role in weight loss postpartum.
Yes. Yes. Everyone says, you know, if you breastfeed, that's going to help the weight melt right off you. You have to breastfeed. You have to. That's going to help you get back to your pre-pregnancy weight. I hear that all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
All the time, which I think can be a bit toxic. Right?
Can totally be a bit toxic.
That's not what the focus on feeding should be. Is weight and your weight. Like it shouldn't be about that. So
I feel very lucky. I had a, you know, fairly smooth breastfeeding journey, which I know is not the case for many women, many of my friends. But I felt a little cheated because my baby was a great feeder. I was producing lots of milk. I was ready for that weight to melt off. And I've actually found that as I have slowed down my breastfeeding, my weight has started to reach back to its equilibrium. And for what it's worth, like listeners out there, this MD is still not at her pre-pregnancy weight.
Yeah.
I still don't have my pre-pregnancy body, nor do I ever actually really expect to see it as it was.
That's
again.
What I was just going to say. Yeah. It's also really okay if you never reach that.
No. But I'm edging on a year, you know, and we're still not back down to, like, there's still clothes that I can't fit into postpartum.
Yeah.
But I was curious as to why some people, so for some people, the caloric burn of breastfeeding is enough and they truly do just kind of drop the pounds quickly. Mm-hmm. But for other people, it can actually make them hold on to weight, especially in those early months. And that's because your body is prioritizing keeping enough energy to make milk. Mm-hmm. So it can actually slow down fat burning or, as you said, boost hunger to protect those stores.
Yeah.
If you also have a baby that doesn't love sleep, if you have a little bit of a FOMO kid, you may be dealing with some sleep deprivation. The shift postpartum can also obviously elevate stress hormones like cortisol, and your metabolism overall can shift towards holding on to fat as opposed to losing it. So all that to say, if your weight doesn't melt off while breastfeeding, it's not necessarily anything that you're doing, right? No. Or wrong, right? No. It's that your body is working hard to nourish your baby and holding on to fat stores as a response to the intensity of the postpartum experience and what you're going through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's so interesting, because I know that I've seen online at least that the hunger that comes from breastfeeding is next level. Like, I've heard that like in your little breastfeeding cart, you need to have snacks there at all times, just in case. And I think that also, like you said, has to do with being up in the wee hours of the night, right? Like, I know just from working night shift, when 3 a.m. rolls around and I'm trying to stay awake, the only thing that sounds good is like the most sugariest food I can get my hands on, right?
Do you mean, are you referencing the labor and delivery cocktail?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
A cup full of ice with apple juice.
Oh, yes. It's so good. And lemonade. Have you tried the lemonade?
Yes. Or you mix the lemonade and the apple juice.
It's so good.
Oh,
it's
so good. Anyone who's ever worked a night shift knows that like nothing hits like apple juice at 3 a.m.
Oh my gosh. The sugar and the cold.
The sugar and the cold.
There's truly nothing like it. It wakes you right up.
I think that probably would have been nice postpartum as well.
Yeah. Yes. How could it not be? Yeah. Truly. Yeah. Okay. So to wrap things up, let me try again. Okay. Just to wrap things up for everyone, I want you all to take away from this episode that your body just built a human and that deserves grace, not pressure. Okay, everyone. So give your body a little rub, a little pat on the back, because growing a human is not an easy feat.
Yeah.
And if you are, you know, never going to be in your pre-pregnancy clothes again, that is okay.
Yeah.
And for the majority of women, that is reality, and that's okay.
It's also okay to not feel okay about that immediately.
True.
Right?
Yep.
I think that I got a lot of messaging from people that said like, oh, I don't even care that I've gained all this weight in pregnancy. I don't even care that it's like that my body looks different postpartum.
And then you're like, but I care.
Because I grew a baby. And I was sitting there going, my baby's no less of a miracle. I don't love him any less, but I do find I care, right? Or at least that this is a big adjustment for me to wrap my head around.
Yep.
And I think that that is an equally valid and normal feeling and doesn't mean that you don't cherish the experience for what it is any more or less.
Yeah.
Right?
That's so true.
The other thing that I would like to, you know, stand on as a takeaway, I think, which we've referenced, I think, multiple times through this episode, is that ultimately health is more about more than just weight.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Your lab work, your blood pressure, your mood, your function, and your healing are so much more important than a number on a scale at any point during a pregnancy journey or postpartum for that matter.
Yeah.
And I think that this also comes back to the importance of individualized care and compassion with respect to talking about weight and what that means to a lot of women.
Yeah. And I think kind of as you touched earlier on in the episode, your mental health is also at such a fragile state throughout pregnancy and postpartum that you need to protect that. And you need to make sure that you are doing everything that you can to make sure your mental health is good, right? Yeah. Especially during this time. And, you know, dieting and exercising isn't necessarily the cure for that. You know,
it's
something that you have to, you know, if going on walks and exercising is something that helps your mental health.
Absolutely. For many people,
it is, right?
For many people, reinvesting in good foods, especially if they didn't feel they were able to experience those during their pregnancy is also helpful, right?
Yep.
But like, you know, your body and that includes your mental health, right? And shrinking and healing are not the same thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. 100%. And if you're navigating with body image challenges during pregnancy, postpartum, or not at all, I've also gathered some helpful resources for everyone. It's on my website, www.nursesydney.com. I'm open about my own journey with eating disorder recovery. And as someone who has been through it and come out stronger on the other side, I can tell you recovery is absolutely worth it. So make sure you go check out those resources online if you need to. And we will be back next week with a fresh episode of the Push Podcast.
In the meantime, chime in.
Yeah. Right?
Tell us your story of your weight experience in pregnancy and postpartum, about your feelings about how your body has changed and what has and hasn't been helpful in navigating that.
Yeah. DM us on Instagram at the.push.podcast. We love hearing from you guys. We love answering you and Absolutely. Chatting and building this community, because I think talking to other women who have also gone through this exact same thing is so helpful. I'm sure you can attest to that as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, or I guess we will just see you next week.
See you next week. Bye.